You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Futures Focus, a fantasy baseball podcast centering around all the top prospects in the game, brought to you by Prospects 1500. My name is Alex Sanchez, and joining me for a very special episode is Nate Eckert, my co-host. Nate, you know why this episode is so special, right?
I do. I remember. It is...
It's our 100th episode. We need a live studio audience to clap for us. That's it's pretty special to us here at Prospects 1500, the Futures Focus podcast, and today is going to be more of a celebration, the look in at the beautiful sport as a whole, not so much just prospects, but taking a step back and appreciating the sport for what it is. We are recording here today, and both of our teams let us down in the playoffs, but that's all right. I'm okay, Nate.
There's always next year,
But that's not here nor there. What we're doing this episode is celebrating 100 episodes of Futures Focus for Prospects 1500. It's quite a feat here, and I'll just get on my soapbox for a second, mm-hmm. and then we'll get mm-hmm. talking. You know, this is a absolutely free website, and we have some special guests on later, by the way. Grant Paulson and CEO Chairman Scott Green are going to be joining us in a little bit. But if I could, this site's completely free. The podcasts are completely free. We don't have a Patreon account. We don't have a subscription service. We have, over 30 or 40 people on staff, and I put that in quotes because nobody's getting paid a penny for this. And to have the site not only run long enough for a podcast to even be set up, and let alone now that podcast has gotten over 100 episodes, I think that's pretty special, Nate.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Just goes to show how many people love baseball and love prospects, and especially our website.
And, I haven't done all 100 episodes, going back. Scott started it out there, and but the vibe was the same, honestly. If you go back and listen to the first couple of episodes, which I recommend you do, it's fun to live in the past. We're going to live in the past, I think, a little bit here as well. But the vibe was the same. We're trying to get these guys out there for fantasy owners. And just baseball lovers in general, if that's your thing, knowing about these prospects and who they are, what they're most likely to become, what is their ceiling, what is their floor, a scouting report, getting eyes on these guys where, we live in an age of a lot of technology, but even then, getting eyes and getting data on some of these single A players can be difficult. And I love some of the top guys in the industry for sure, but they certainly can't see everybody. And so I think this website has found a very nice niche. So, Nate, congratulations. 100 episodes.
Likewise. Congratulations to you, man. You were doing it longer than I have been. So I'm brand new as far as the 100 episodes are concerned. Yeah. Maybe I've contributed to 20 of them, perhaps. I'm not entirely sure.
I'd have to go back and look and see how many I've even done. I don't know off the top of my head, but in celebration of all of this, Scott has decided to have a giveaway for only listeners of this podcast, which, as much as I would like to think that there's hundreds of thousands of listeners. There's really not. I'll just say that if you're listening to this podcast and you enter this contest, you have a great chance of winning. And Scott's going to go over the prize in a little bit. I don't want to give that away. But what you do need to do is listen to this podcast. I think that's fair. And provide some of the answers to prospects1500@gmail.com with the answers. And so all you need to do, we're going to be going over our favorite prospects of all time. You just got to give me who each of the guests' favorite prospects were. That includes Nate, myself, Scott, and Grant. We all kind of go over our favorite prospects in this episode. So if you can name all four, you'll be entered in a drawing, and then Scott's going to send shipping covered, all that good stuff, the prize, and listen a little bit later for that prize. I do know what it is. But I want everybody to listen. It's a good prize, Nate.
Good prize. I bet.
It involves autographs. I'll just say that. You will get autographs. Yeah.
Ooh.
Of minor leaguers too. So
yeah,
cool. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Sweet. So yeah, just, you know, honestly, we're not going to be a stickler. Just, you know, email us with something, we'll probably put you in anyway. we're feeling. So with that being said, let's kick off the episode here. Nate, I want to hear your sort of favorite prospect of all time. It could be recent. It could be when you were a kid. I have some off the wall ones I'm going to share as well. It'd be more than one, but just sort of the prospect memories that you have in the last, in your lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. I think what really starts to get me excited about prospects is being able to figure out that, like, who's that next guy that's going to be coming up, that's really going to make an impact almost immediately when he gets in, and being the first, you know, the first guy to get him in my respective fantasy leagues. Of course, dynasty leagues are a lot more difficult, but before I started playing in dynasty, my first real scouting move was Cody Bellinger, of all players, when it was the year after he had switched up his swing. He went from being a true hitter to more of a lofty power swing, and they taught him how to do that. At the time, it was in single A advanced Rancho Cucamonga,
yeah,
before they were demoted to single A. And I took one look at his video. I was on MLB.com looking at the Dodgers top 30. And after I saw that swing change and I watched him unload, and when Bellinger, I mean, I know I've given him some crap over the last year or so, but when he gets into a pitch, it's one of the prettiest swings, period, in my opinion, in baseball. When everything goes right, when he times it, when he gets those hips moving and he gets that load up, and then he just exhales, you know, it was a beautiful sight to be seen, and it blew me away. So right then and there, he was on my radar, and I don't think that a lot of the guys in my redraft league even had an idea of who he was. And that year, I was able to pick him up. It was like the first week of the season, because the Dodgers, they promoted him really quick. And that was his NL Rookie of the Year, you know, massacre season, where he just obliterated the ball and had, like, I don't know, 20 steals or something like that, and set the NL rookie home run record at the time. And I also was able to pick up Aaron Judge in that same swoop. It was like the next day I picked up Aaron Judge. So I won the league that year. And it was basically because I had made those two pickups. And when you could do that, you know, it really sets you apart from the rest of the league. Now, granted, it's been a long time since I've been able to grab anybody really in the same in the same sort of style that I did Bellinger and Judge, because after that happened, everybody was kind of smartened up to, okay, well, maybe Nate's onto something, you know, maybe we should start looking and learning about these prospects, because these kids are ready to go. I mean, once they get to the bigs, forget about it, you know. As long as they're promoted and they look solid across the board, feel free to invest fully and at least give them a shot and see what happens, you know. That was really fun because I changed the culture of our league with just two pickups, because they were that poignant. And that was a fun one for me.
Yeah. That is a fun strategy that a lot of redraft leagues don't have, right? Where you know, they're not worried about prospects and you just pick them up and they turn into something, especially if it's a keeper league, you know, keep five or whatever. And that's really fun to get those guys off. Like you said, dynasty's a little tougher. Those almost are a little bit more rewarding though, when you pick a guy up, like my favorite that I'll talk about here. You pick them off of the free agents and sign them to your team. And then they develop into something. That one is really a good feeling. I've done that with Anthony Volpe. But my favorite one was, and my favorite prospect recently is obviously Ronald Acuna for me. I picked him up in, you know, all these dynasty leagues when he started to show up as, you know, low A, high A, and even, you know, that year was just so insane to see somebody go that quickly through a system and just get better at each level was something I wasn't used to. I mean, I was used to prospects at that time, but to see it happening on your favorite team was something else. And then turning into something that I could never even have dreamt of, you know, this last year, it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, I remember when he came up, my buddy was getting married, and I do this little podcast for them for fantasy football and stuff. And it was rookie year. And I said, you know, if you give me the code, Ronald Acuna is our savior, I'll buy you a beer at the wedding. And so even then I was like, I was already like, this is the guy that's going to
do it. Yeah.
That's 2017, 2018 or whatever. And then, you know, had a little injury in between, but coming back and doing what he's done. And, you know, I have a jersey of his, I have a bunch of auto cards, I have this, I really should know, I should get the name, but this artist that does super realistic drawings, beautiful, does an Acuna one. I just got all of his stuff, and it all started when he was a prospect, so that's really fun. I also have a couple like that just for some reason came to me when thinking about names, and I want to know if you remember these guys, Nate. And they're old, so I've loved baseball for a long time. This goes back to 97, 98, and sort of like in my collecting baseball cards days, getting a rookie card was obviously very important. And they started putting out, like, if you were a high draft pick, you know, you got maybe a card with Tops or whatever the year before you came up or something like that. Or Bowman was still kind of going around with these guys that, you know, had no MLB stats. And so I started just sort of just looking at the top guys, and this is 12-year-old Alex at the time, and I started to fall in love with these young guys that were going to be the next best thing. So Travis Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona Diamondbacks, played for other couple teams. Yep. 98, number one prospect for the Oakland Athletics, Ben Grieve.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I mean, those are two, like you said, sweet swinging lefties.
Right.
I thought they were the next best thing. And of course, you know, on my favorite team, I needed the next prospect. So there's a bunch of guys like Wes Helms. I remember being waiting for him to come up. Brian Klesko was another one that as a Braves fan, I followed closely in his ascent. And he became like my idol there for a second. And then he had a decent career, but Klesko is another one. You know, Richie Sexson.
Oh yeah,
Rich stood out as a 6'7", 6'8" guy, and then in All-Star Baseball 1998 or All-Star Baseball 1999, they had minor leaguers in that game. Like maybe four or five per major league team. Like they had actual minor league guys, which, you know, was removed from baseball games until like recently in MLB The Show. But he was a minor leaguer, and I knew about him, and he was in the Indians, Guardians, but yes, at the time, Indians.
At the time. Mm-hmm.
At the time, the Indians minor league system. And you brought him up, and you had a little icon, a little cursor, right? And for most people, it was, you know, let's say an inch, 2 inches on the screen.
Like the size of a quarter.
Whatever, yeah. You know, and the best hitters, like Larry Walker and Chipper Jones and Jeter, they all had
half
big
the zone.
One, you know.
Half the zone. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so... And they had hot and cold. It was an awesome game, actually. Like, All-Star Baseball was so ahead of its time. But anyway, they would have hot and cold zones. So I brought Richie Sexson up. He had all blue cold zones in his entire thing. But his icon, it was a glitch or something, and it took up the entire strike zone. So if it, you said it was a quarter, it was literally like the size of a glass, you know? Like,
It was
huge, and you just drop bombs, and it was like this 6'8" freak on the screen. So Richie Sexson, and so I was like, oh, who is this guy? He must be great.
Oh yeah,
he had it. You know, all those guys were okay for a second, and so they did make it, but none of them did much really. So I mean, those are just some of the funny, quirky prospects in the past. Anybody else that you followed?
Love when I was playing? I was playing Babe Ruth, and the only real way that I could learn about prospects when I was 14 would be like ESPN the magazine had just came out. What else? Baseball America, of course, but J.D. Drew.
Oh, yes.
He was such the guy, like coming out of FSU, right? Florida State.
Couldn't tell you, but I do remember. Wasn't he top pick, and then didn't want to sign with the Phillies or whatever, and then they threw batteries at him at Philadelphia.
Yeah, they did. They did. He ended up going to Boston, I believe.
Boston or St. Louis. He played for the Braves for a second too. Had a great year with the Braves.
Yeah, he had a good career. It ended up having a pretty decent career, all things considered. Yeah, but
another sweet swinging lefty too.
Oh man, that guy's swing. This is like Will Clark meets Sean Green or something, you know?
Yeah,
and he was. I remember the numbers he was putting up. It was either Miami or FSU, but I'm pretty sure it was FSU. And I remember. Reading the articles about him in those magazines and the way he wore his Oakleys, you know, I remember back in the day where Oakleys were just like the thing to wear.
FSU.
Okay. God, I used to want to be him, you know, hitting 500 on the year, some craziness like that. I think he hit like 499 one season at FSU.
Yeah.
So that was one.
He reminds me of, of like Bryce Harper before Bryce Harper. He just, for whatever reason, we kind of like a lot of fanfare before he even stepped on the for the professional team.
Right.
But backed it up for the most part. Yeah, I mean, his was injuries. I remember him.
Yes, for sure. Being
injured
for
a lot.
Sure.
And then his brother. Remember his brother, Stephen Drew,
too?
Yeah,
He was a nice little shortstop middle infielder.
Rick Ankiel, if we go back to the Cardinals, I remember when he came up with his high Sox, and he was just this unbelievable talent. Then couldn't find the strike zone against the Braves. I remember that Cardinals Braves, and he just threw like five pitches to the backstop.
Ooh.
And that was it.
And
then he became an outfielder, and he played. Yeah. Came back and played outfield and for the Braves.
Yeah.
And came back and played for the Braves too. Yeah, there's some awesome names. We could go on and on and on. It just kind of, I remember, A.J. Hinch, remember? I mean, he became a manager, but I remember him coming up as a catcher with Oakland. Another name just popped into my head.
Big one.
Because I would go in the backyard and, you know, I'd create these lineups and I'd throw like a wiffle ball in the air and hit it. And then I had to create an all rookie team, like an all prospect team. So I remember AJ Hinch was the catcher and Travis Lee. And then I liked, you know, and like I had Nomar too, because he was youngish. So
it was
a sweet team. Yeah.
I bet. Those were the days.
Yeah. All right, Nate. All right. We have some special guests we need to get to, so we'll go ahead and take a break here. But we have Grant Paulson. I think that might be one of the biggest celebrity industry guys that we have ever had on the podcast. I mean, we've had Tyler Freeman, major leaguer for sure, but Grant's a huge name in the industry, Washington guy. So we're going to bring him on, and then it's only fair to have Scott come on. I kind of know what we're going to talk about. We've already recorded it, but I think it's a very insightful conversation. He's very, very honest about, you know, how he created the website, his plans for the future and all of that. So really a good kind of almost State of the Union address that if you don't know Scott or realize that, you know, he's the guy behind all of this, I think it's a really cool stuff. So, this is Futures Focus 100th episode, Nate. Let's go ahead and take a break and we'll be back with Grant Paulson. And we are here with another special guest, this time Grant Paulson of 106 The Fan. And he also does the prospects on MLB Network as well. It's quite an honor for such a big celebrity in the industry to be with us. So, Grant, how you doing? Thanks for coming on, man.
Well, thank you guys. It's very nice of you to say. My pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Alex, Nate, thanks for thinking of me and having me. How's everybody doing?
Oh, it's our pleasure. I couldn't tell you how excited. Like we were just saying before we got onto the show, how pumped we are. So really excited to have Grant on the show with us. And thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come hang out with the lower totem of the polls.
No, I'm excited. I'm fired up. You guys do a great job. I love all the attention that prospects are getting and all of the entertaining shows that kind of add to the love of baseball at a time where I think things are going well at the major league level. The rule changes are working, but we need to keep growing the passion for the game. So I'm excited to be here.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's a
great
point. I do think prospects are kind of the in craze right now. And in this age of technology, people are starting to really want to, you know, get ahead of some of these guys and not just see them when they come up for the first time and get introduced, but to kind of follow them in the minors. It's so easy nowadays to do that. So, Grant, I have a few questions for you. Let's start, since this is, again, a celebration of just baseball, I suppose, this whole episode, this 100th episode. Tell me one baseball memory. It could be anything from the minors to the majors, a game you attended when you were a kid, whatever. What's the one baseball memory that you cherish?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many. It's hard to limit it down to just a few, but I would say the first thing that comes to mind is the first time I can remember being in a Major League Baseball game. And it's probably not my actual first game, if I had to guess, but it's the first one I remember being at. With my father took me. I was with my brothers, my whole family, and we went to Camden Yards in Baltimore. I'm based in the D.C. area, but at this time as a child, the Nationals didn't exist. And so the Orioles were my team. I was a diehard Orioles fan, and you know, a couple of times a summer, we would go to Birds games. They were about 2 hours, Baltimore was, from where I lived. So we didn't get to go very often, and we were a family of six. So, you know, it wasn't like we had season tickets or we were all getting to go as much as we would have liked. But I watched every single game, every single night. And I remember one of the, you know, earliest memories I have, frankly, in sports and in life was going to a day game at Camden Yards, and Rafael Palmeiro hitting a home run. And I remember I, you know, got up that day and I read had the sports page, and when we were talking up to Baltimore, I was looking at all the pitching matchups and seeing who was on the mound and the ERAs, and it was just a different time. But I was a big Palmeiro fan. I loved obviously Cal Ripken Jr. and that Orioles team, and that's one of my first memories. One of my favorite things baseball wise, I still remember is going to a minor league game in Richmond, Virginia, when the Richmond Flying Squirrels, same ballpark, by the way, were actually at the time the Richmond Braves. And they were the AAA affiliate for many years for Atlanta, and that was only about an hour from my house. And I went to a lot of those games. It was a lot cheaper than going to Camden Yards, and it was also about half the distance from where I lived. Mm-hmm. And I remember one night we showed up at the ballpark in the summer. My dad again and my mom and me and my siblings went, and it was dollar night at the ballpark. And so we got in. It was a $1 ticket. It was $1 hot dogs and $1 soft beverages. And you got a T-shirt when you got into the game. So like for, you know, for a dollar, literally, you got like your ticket to the game, general admission. You got a T-shirt, you got hot dogs and drinks. And I still remember like how excited my dad was. You know, he just like that to me was, it's just like a romantic baseball moment of thinking about just how cool that was for my family. And then I guess long story short, other things along the way would include, I went to Steven Strasburg's first professional game in Altoona, Pennsylvania, made a 3-hour road trip with some buddies. At that point, I was old enough to drive. We went to his first pro start. That was really cool to see him in AA after we'd heard so much about him at San Diego State. That was a great memory, sitting right behind the screen with a couple of the Pirates pitchers who weren't throwing that day, kind of with the guns next to us and taking the book. And we just kind of were asking them after every pitch for the velocities and kind of what he had just thrown. And he was one of my favorite prospects ever, as one of the most hyped guys ever. Obviously wasn't in the minors very long. But then some of the cool things I've seen at state, you know, ballparks. I've never seen a no-hitter or a perfect game or even close. I was at a 20-strikeout game, Max Scherzer against the Tigers in D.C. I've actually, weirdly enough, been at like 4 cycles, I think. A couple of random ones. Aubrey Huff for the Orioles. Felix P.A. for the Orioles. A couple, Trey Turner for the Nationals come to mind. So those are just some of the things that jump out at me as I kind of rack my brain initially. And then maybe the best environment I've ever been in, non-playoff division, because I've been lucky enough to cover the league championship series on the field in the dugout, you know, champagne spray and celebrations and stuff for MLB Network Radio for many years. But in terms of just like going to a regular season baseball game, being at Strasburg's 14-strikeout debut against the Pirates, really thing too. So those are some of the things that come to mind.
So you were there for his debut. I watched that on television and I was riveted. I can't even imagine what it must have been like in person.
Oh, it was awesome. Well, the big thing about it was here in D.C. at that time. So you're going back. He was drafted 1-1 in 09, obviously. And so it was the 2010 season. It was the summer of 2010. And the Nationals, if you remember, that they came back to D.C. in 2005. After what was a 34-year hiatus. So there had been no baseball for over 3 decades. When they initially came back in 05, they were operating literally like their offices were out of trailers in the parking lot of their old ballpark, which was called RFK Stadium, which is dilapidated and being torn down as we speak in D.C. But it was the old stadium where the then Redskins, the old name of the football team here, had won all their Super Bowls. And so it was this, you know, decades old, just really run down, like awful ballpark. I mean, it was not a baseball ballpark. They had played there in the past, but it was horrible place to go watch baseball. Having said all that, people were elated because they were back and you had a baseball team and DC, you know, so many older fans who remembered the Senators, you know, were beside themselves and emotional and when they left and came back. And so when he made his debut in 2010, it was 5 years after they returned. They'd been really, really bad for 5 years. They had lost 100 games in a row for a couple straight years as this terrible team. And it was kind of this seminal moment where it was literally the first time since the Nationals existed where it was like a must-see event. It was a you get to go to the ballpark. You don't have to go to the ballpark kind of night. Yeah. And it was the first time, and it was packed. There was, you know, 40,000 people, and they'd moved over to Nats Park a year and a half earlier. So still in its infancy, and the energy was amazing. It was the first like nationally relevant night at the Nats ballpark where like all the who's who in baseball was there. So to be there to see, you know, all the hype and everyone gets so excited about his call up and how often do you see all that? And then he goes 4 1/3 and walks 5 or whatever, but 7 innings, 2 runs on a 2-run homer, 1 mistake, 14 strikeouts. He struck out the last 7 batters he faced. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It really was. And I remember watching that game thinking, I mean, the fans, just like you said, were hanging on every pitch. I mean, they were right there with them for the whole stint. And I remember thinking to myself, I've never seen anyone throw a breaking ball that looks like Strasburg's. It reminded me of like a frisbee. It was throwing it so wildly, not wildly, that's a terrible word for it, but it had so much movement on it. I remember thinking, oh my God, this guy he's the real deal. Man, kudos to you for being there in real life. That would have been incredible. I wouldn't have
missed it. Yeah, it was a must attend event.
So yeah. It's funny, I have a Strasburg framed picture with the dirt from the mound from that game you're talking about right on my wall.
Oh wow.
No way.
Yeah, out of all the guys to mention, I am my wife doesn't understand why I have it. She's like, you have dirt on the wall. I was going to ask your favorite prospect of all time. It kind of sounds like maybe it's Strasburg, or is there another guy that kind of takes the cake for like your favorite prospect of all time?
That's interesting. I mean, so Strasburg, because of the hype and the attention he got coming up, you know, was definitely probably on the short list. It was just such an important time. I think he changed prospect culture, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's why he might be the answer for me. Like, he came along at a time where there weren't a lot of shows. Every team didn't have a podcast on their system. And, you know, people weren't really evaluating players in the minor leagues to the same extent. And then we had the advent, obviously, of, you know, you could always dig up the box scores, but it became way easier with minor league baseball and MLB.TV and, you know, MLB Pipeline and all these things where it really exploded right around at the same time Strasburg did. And I think the infatuation with him was a craze and a mania, the likes of which we hadn't seen. And I really think it kind of jump started what I would consider to be prospect culture as we know it now. So I think he is probably an answer. The thing was, he was just not in the minor leagues for that long,
right?
Because he was drafted summer of 09. He was in the show within a calendar year later. They shut him down after he was first drafted and debuted him in the AFL. And then he made, if I had to, you know, guess, like 10 or 11 minor league starts before he was called up. So it's a little hard to say him. I mean, some of the guys along the way that I've really loved as prospects and just been completely enamored by, I was a huge fan early on in like the prospect game years ago. If you want to go in my backyard, of Matt Wieters, drafted out of Georgia Tech, 2007, fifth overall. There were websites made about Matt Wieters with like Chuck Norris jokes, but they were Wieters jokes. And the hype around him was huge, not to the extent of Strasburg, but I mean, I still remember, you know, driving a few hours to go to his major league debut. And he was a guy because you could check his box score every single night, unlike a pitcher. You know, what? Mm-hmm. He was 2-for-4 with another double. He hit another homer at Bowie. Like, I was fired up about Wieters for sure. On a national level, you know, there's a handful of guys that come to mind, but I would say in the early going for me, I started covering prospects pretty intensely in the Major League Baseball draft back in 2007. And I was a big David Price guy out of Vanderbilt, went 1-1. Another guy that flew to the major leagues and got to the Rays and ended up pitching out of the pen in his first year when they went to the World Series. So he'd be on a short list for me. And then more recently, Ellie De La Cruz. I got to, you know, I'm in the dugout for the National League every year for the SiriusXM Futures game, game broadcast. And before we went to the Futures game last year, you know, I kind of staked claim on, like, that was my guy in the game. That was the player I was most excited to see, and I've been tracking him every night. And then I ended up sitting for a few innings next to him in the dugout, kind of talking to him during the game. And he was wearing like these cleats, these shoes that like honored his mom and like a picture of his mother. And he was just the coolest guy. You know, we had this ongoing discussion, and he wasn't, you know, you could tell he's not like he's been here for 15 years speaking English, but he does it plenty well. And our interaction was so pleasant. There was just an energy with him that I loved. And so to see him having been so electric in this first year has been awesome. So I could go on, but those are some of the guys just popping out at the, you know, first thing I'm thinking.
Yeah, Ellie at that Futures game, Nate and I were there. I was on the field. Nate, you went to the game. But Ellie was the one that changed my mind the most out of anybody I had seen. I knew he was a good prospect, but from that day I said top five easy. He just was so impressive. So that's a really interesting call to put with some older guys like Weeders and Strasburg. So that just shows you his ceiling. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So.
I'm kind of trying to mix it up with like guys that, because I was such a fan of the O's and now, you know, more recently the Nats and just guys that I covered, so to speak, in terms of they were easy to go to with the affiliates. But yeah, in terms like there are so many guys like De La Cruz where, you know, right away you kind of are enamored with a skill set. And you find yourself like every single night checking a box score. Like I do that now.
We were doing that.
Yep. Yeah. I do that now with like Junior Caminero of the Rays. I'm no longer like a diehard Orioles fan, but I've seen Jackson Holliday in person five or six times this year and watch him every night. And he's just amazing. We could talk about, you know, those special blue chippers, you know, all day long, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do. We do it every week.
That's right. Nate, I know you had a question for Grant.
I do. Yes. Yeah. First of all, Grant, again, thank you for coming on to the show. Hearing you talk about prospects and baseball in general really makes me excited and happy, you know, to hear someone in our industry who has obviously done very well for himself, is a real, you know, real recognizes real, and you're a real one. And it pleases me no more than to find that out. And first and foremost, thank you on behalf of Alex and I. I wanted to know, as I'm looking at your Twitter page, you've got all sorts of stuff going on. Looks like it says play-by-play for The Athletic. Did I read that correctly?
Athletic's more of a writing gig, but yeah, I get to do play-by-play in the area, calling, you know, I prefer baseball and football, but, you know, calling anything. And that's kind of ultimate goal is to do every game for somebody. But yeah, I've had a good time doing that.
No, that's incredible. Also, you know, NFL, NHL coverage for NBCS Washington, MLB Network Radio with Grant and Danny at 106.7 The Fan. You're all over the place, man. And with your 125,000 followers, a number that I couldn't even – I think you're following as many people as I have following me, which is only 300 something, which is a number that I don't know if I should have said on air, but you know, whatever, it is what it is. It's not like I'm going to lie about it. What got you into all of this? And if I may, what's really been what you've found to be your not secret sauce or anything like that, but as you go along in your career, has there been like a single, not mantra, but like something that you're always referring to in your mind as far when you make your decisions as to what gigs to take and what moves to make, etc.?
I think that, it's a really good question. It's not a question I've ever been asked. I like that a lot. I guess I'll start with the first question because it's easier to answer, and I'll try to be succinct, and I'll make a long story short. I got a weird backstory. Everyone's is going to be different, right? So some people start as interns and climb, and some people kind of, you know, luck box into it or whatever. Some people go to school and just work their way up. For me, I started in radio at a really young age, so it's funny. I was a diehard sports fan. I was arguing sports with my uncle, who many, many, many years ago was like the number one radio disc jockey for music, like a rock station in Pittsburgh called WDVE. He did a morning show where, in addition to playing rock songs, they would do a lot of bits back in the day when, you know, it was guy talk radio. So it was a lot of like you know, kind of funny, but at times like edgy things that they would do. But he was always trying to find a way to make people laugh and do bits. And so we got into this big argument about sports, and he had me on his radio show. I called in to do football picks. And this is like around 1998. I was 10 years old or 9 years old. And he called me his little sports bookie. So I would call into his show, and I would give him like the betting lines. And obviously now this is all ubiquitous, but at that time, you know, nobody really talked about sports betting. But he would call me his 10-year-old nephew sports bookie. So I would give him the line and the pick for the day and tell him who to pick or whatever. And we would do this ahead of the football games on Fridays. And so because I was doing that, the local newspaper wrote a story about me called the King George Journal here or back home in Virginia. It's a very small once a week paper that, you know, a couple thousand people in my town of 25,000 people read. Mostly they would just get it at their house and use it to, you know, start their charcoal or something. But long story short, they wrote a story about me. I started doing a weekly column for them where basically, I mean, it's pretty embarrassing looking back on it in terms of how bad it was. But like I would write 100 words, like a couple paragraphs, like my take on sports, and just a little tiny like eighth of the page was like Grant's. I think it was called like Grant's picks or something. And I would just say, hey, the Wizards are going to beat the Pistons this week. Here's why or whatever. And so I did that. And because I was doing that, the local television station in D.C., Channel 9, WUSA, did a TV segment on the fact that I was doing these radio call-ins and writing these stories. And I was, you know, 10 years old. And so they did like a 6-minute story on it for, you know, a May sweeps week at one point, like on the local TV news. And then they got a good response. So they had me up to do football picks on Channel 9. And so for the football season that year, I was doing, you know, going up there and in D.C. and doing football picks. And they brought me to training camp to interview players and stuff like that. So because then that's a CBS affiliate, to make a long story, which is, you know, the coolest thing that's ever happened to me short. The Letterman show, David Letterman, saw Channel 9's, you know, or not him specifically, but
somebody,
talent producers or whatever.
Right.
Saw the bit of this kid who's talking about sports and is a fast talker who like spits out stats, and they thought it was funny. And so the Letterman show had me up to be on the Letterman show. And I ended up, Dave's a huge sports fan, as it turns out, and, like enjoyed the segment for whatever reason. I don't quite know why. But everyone laughed a lot and thought it was funny that I guess I could like talk and chew gum at the same time. So they ended up having me on over the course of like, you know, 5 years, 6 years, like 7 times over an extended period. And from those appearances, I would get cool opportunities. So, you know, got to go to Super Bowl with Channel with ESPN and ABC, and went to the Super Bowl with the David Letterman show 1 year. You know, and other things like that. Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, got to, you know, do a story there. And so because of all that, like I got this opportunity to start hosting a show on a kids radio channel on XM back in like 2002, about 21 years ago. Obviously, that's a couple channels ago, but I'm still with them now on MLB Network Radio. So I've been doing shows ever since, and right around when I was 13 at the time. And so that was kind of my start, to be honest with you. And, you know, it came to a point where after getting a lot of cool opportunities and doing amazing things, I like grew out of that kid mode of kind of being cute, so to speak. And I grew a beard, and, you know, my chubby kid frame just became general, like, you know, teenager chubby, and I wasn't as fun or cute anymore. So then I went to college, and I was kind of had 1 foot in, 1 foot out, but I always knew I wanted to continue to cover sports and be in the sports media. And it felt like I'd, you know, been at the water fountain and been pulled away a little bit, and I was desperate to get back. And so that's what I've done. I've just kind of grinded and wanted to be, you know, doing sports broadcasting my whole life. It's all I've ever wanted to do, you know, from when I was probably like, I think most people want to play like until they're a lot older. For me, you know, I've wanted to. Since I was 7 or 8, I've wanted to be a play-by-play guy, or, you know, and a broadcaster. And so I'm living that dream as we speak.
That's awesome, man. Congrats. Dang,
that's a great story. Love it. Letterman is definitely not a bad break.
Yeah,
that's right. Break myself, I mean,
but, it's surreal to look back on and say that.
Yeah.
Like,
what a cool
saying thing. It out loud is like, wow, that was weird that happened. You know, it's been so weird, long.
Awesome, yeah.
It was very cool.
Well, Grant, don't want to keep you on much longer, but really do appreciate you coming on. I actually did want to talk some national prospects, but we're kind of pressed for time here. So why don't you just give me maybe your favorite Nationals prospect right now? I know we got the big names, James Wood and
Dylan Cruz,
Green, Brady House, a couple of ex-Padre guys. But overall, like, who are you most excited for this Nationals team that you can look forward to in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think Dylan Cruz is their best prospect, which is not going to surprise anybody. Maybe the best hitter in college baseball this year, got on base in every single game at LSU. And as a professional in 35 games since being drafted, about 140 at bats as his year just ended, hit over 290 with an OPS of about 840 and held his own. He was an A-ball, and I saw him a few times in Fredericksburg, and he was really good. And then they bumped him up to Double-A, and he struggled a little bit. But they knew that that might happen, and they also knew that he wouldn't get down on himself. He's mentally advanced. He's going to be in the major leagues next year. The cool thing for the Nationals is that they got a lot of guys that are going to be in the major leagues next year. Cruz will be in the outfield. So will James Wood, who I love. He's 6'6 plus, and he can play center field if they want him to. I'd move him to the corner, you know, for the same reason you put Judge in the corner. It's easier on the body of a guy that big. He did strike out close to 38% of the time this year, so that's a little bit alarming, but a huge power. Played most of his season, you know, with home affiliates in Wilmington and Harrisburg that are far from hitter's havens, and he hit 26 home runs and drove in 90 with a OPS of almost 900. So I think he's going to have to make a little bit of a swing adjustment, make a little more contact, cut down on strikeouts to find his ceiling. But his ceiling is legitimately, you know, MVP type potential in terms of the speed, the power. He's just got to some unicorn traits at his size at 6'6 and change. Brady House, their third baseman of the future, had a really good year, is a really good player. I think is one of the more underrated prospects in the whole industry. Hit about 315 with a 900 OPS. Didn't hit for a ton of in-game power with home runs, but you guys, it sounded like you were, you know, been at some futures games. I mean, there's nobody who put on a better power display at this year's futures game than Brady House did out in Seattle, driving the ball down the left field line. He's got massive pop. I don't really worry about that with him. And then, you know, everyone's heard of those prospects, so I'll just say, I guess, to be quick here on the back end, two guys that I really like that are a little deeper down their system. One of them is actually in the big leagues already right now. I've always loved this guy. His name's Jacob Young. He was a seventh round pick at the University of Florida, who scored the second highest run total in all of baseball behind Aaron Judge last year. He's just a kind of a little guy who's a scrappy look. You know, everyone kind of says he's a fourth outfielder. I think MLB Pipeline lists him as like the Nats' 30th prospect or something. He's a guy that's going to give you more than you think all the time. He's a plus defensive player who can play center and a corner. He's a plus runner. He's a good bunter. He can hit a little bit. I think he's got like an Adam Eaton profile, if you guys remember that player.
Oh, yeah.
Where he could hit like 12 to 15 home runs when it's all clicking and play enough defense that, like, you go back, Eaton was like a 6 WAR player a couple times. So I would not be surprised, even though Young, ideally, if things go their way and they have Cruz and Wood and Lane Thomas and you know, Elijah Green or something in the outfield, Dalen Lyle maybe, then you wouldn't need Jacob Young in the outfield. But he's definitely a guy that that I would keep an eye on. And then a deeper cut real quick would be Mitchell Parker, left-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
Spent the year in Double-A. His issue is throwing strikes. But he made one start at Triple-A at the end of the year and struck out 3 in 3 innings. But again this year in Double-A, he's overpowering. I mean, 132 strikeouts in 113 innings. Average against the last 2 years was probably around 215 or 220. If he can throw strikes, he's going to be a starter in the big leagues and a pretty good one. And no one ever talks about this guy. I think he's probably ranked somewhere near the bottom of the top 30 in pipeline. But he's a major league starter if he can, you know, that one part of his game improves. But he's been really, really good a few of the times I've seen him.
Yeah, this system is getting really scary as a Braves fan. They're doing it the right way. It's with patience and not forcing anybody up. Like you said, Dylan Cruz could be in the big leagues now, but they're doing the right thing and, you know, not pushing these guys. And they're all going to arrive at the same time, which is terrifying for the rest of the league. But really good stuff, Grant.
Especially those Braves.
Yeah. all right, Grant, thanks again for coming on. Appreciate it. This is, I'll give you a second here to maybe plug anything that you're working on, anybody, anything that we should check out online, athletic, what's going on with you?
Yeah, I appreciate you. Nothing really to plug. I'll say that anything that I normally do or anything people would want to keep up on. I mentioned on my Twitter, so you can check me out. At Grant H. Paulson is the best way to kind of keep in touch.
Awesome. Again, Grant, thanks so much for coming on. We got a superstar to come on to our show. Nate, we did it. We've made it.
We did it. We did it. We have made it. Now, Grant, one last thing. To truly make it today and in this industry, I now currently follow you on Twitter.
Look at you.
If I could get a follow back.
Let's go now.
If I could be one of those 334, maybe we could change the ratio here. And as I sell my soul on the line,
we'll make it work.
Yeah. All right. I've got a recording of it. So
there you go.
We could always come back.
That's funny.
I appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Well, I appreciate you guys. Keep up the good work.
All right, Nate. Thanks a lot, Grant. Appreciate it. Futures Focus. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we are here with our special guest, the president, CEO, the boss man, Scott Green. It's only appropriate to have this guy on. He's been here, obviously, since the beginning for our 100th episode. Scott, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Alex. Great, great, great. Thanks for having me on. Episode number 100. Do you know who the hosts were for episode one?
I remember listening to you really early on before I even was a member. I was like, I like this website a lot. I remember you talking about wrestling, and I was like, well, get on with it already because I don't care about wrestling. But I don't know who was on the very first one.
Yes, my good friend Jake Barry and I were the hosts for the first season, I guess, or if you will, of Futures Focus. And I think Ben Wilson was our first guest, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to look back in the archives here, and of course, it's not loading right up on my phone. But Jake and I were the hosts. I know that. And we did have MLB's Jonathan Mayo on one of our very first episodes. So if people want to go back and listen to some of the early days of Futures Focus, that's something that they might have fun doing.
Yeah, they'll be interested to see if we were doing well back then with some of our predictions and see, because those have been several years now. You could see if you were on the right path or not with your analysis of older prospects then. But
and you know what, Alex, I'm confirming my memory is not great these days, but I was actually right. March 17th of 2019. So about 2019. Four and a half years ago, TB Dubs 11, Ben Wilson was our first guest.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'm going to take a listen to that and see how far we've come or how little we've come. One of the two is going to be true. But I do remember listening. You guys did a good podcast. I remember listening to it and saying, wow, these guys, this is pretty cool. I'll have to put this into my rotation. And then I just got to be a writer on the staff. So there we go.
And then you expressed interest in leading up the podcast just a couple years ago. And we've taken it to new heights and gotten a lot of votes through Baseball Pods. So thank you, Alex.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And hopefully we keep growing. I mean, having Grant Paulson on as a guest, I think that's pretty big too. That was another big guy. So we're getting some big names. We had Tyler Freeman. Remember him making a guest appearance too? That was fun. He sprungboard his career. He's a home, you know, he hit a couple home runs this year. That was fun to have him. So go back through those episodes if you haven't. If you just discovered us, I know they're a little outdated in terms of the prospects we're talking about, but still some good stuff on some of those special episodes. But that does bring me to a good topic to discuss here with you, Scott. It's kind of how you started Prospects 1500, the how, the where, the when, the why, all that good stuff, and kind of pull back the curtain a little bit on exactly what Prospects 1500 was, is, and is becoming perhaps in the future.
Loaded question. Well, yeah. I'll try to make it as brief as possible, but I've loved baseball forever. And I started collecting baseball cards when I was 7 years old. and I still collect them to this date over 40 years later. And I remember my first Dynasty League with prospects, I believe was back in 2008 or 2009. And it was a league called Auction Gods. And you had to, bid on players, your regular players, in an auction. But then the prospects, I believe, were drafted. And so I was studying and trying to learn about these prospects back in 2008, 2009. And I had never really followed minor league baseball and was not in the know for prospects and who was coming up. So I did my best. I think I remember drafting guys like Jason Hayward and Mike Moustakas. And my team name, I won't forget this, my team name was Hydra. And Hydra, at the time, I'm a huge Lost fan, the TV show Lost. And at the time, I think that was season 3 or 4. And Hydra was one of the stations that was on the island. And I named my prospect team Hydra. But anyway, several years later, I just really liked the idea of writing about prospects. And I was doing some writing for a website that was on a forum. The minor league part of it was just a forum, like a message board. And I didn't really own it. And I tried to get a few people to help me out with it. And from there, I said, you know what? I want to start my own blog. I want to have my own platform, and I can get people that I know from around the country to cover certain players or teams. And so we threw around the idea with a couple of other people in one of my deep dynasty leagues. And we're about to register the blog. And one of the guys says, you know what? Let's just register a website domain and go from there. And the original idea was Prospects 1001. I don't know really where that came from. I wanted to be a large number, and I wanted it to be over 1,000 for some reason. So I came up with the idea 1001. But before we went ahead and registered anything, we said, what's the format going to be? What are we going to do on the site? And we wanted to rank prospects, and we wanted to do more than other sites were doing. And with MLB, you get your top 30, and with some other sites, you get your top 10 and 20. So I said, let's do 50. And if we have 50 per team, and there are 30 different organizations, then we're going to be ranking 1,500 prospects. And boom, then we said, that's our name. We're Prospects 1500. So we registered the domain, Prospects 1500. We launched the site. It went live back in December of 2016. And January of 2017, we tried and succeeded in publishing a different top 50 every day for the month of January. And that was really how we started. I didn't have 30 different writers at the time. Some people doubled up. Some were collaborations. But that was the goal. That was to rank prospects, to have a different writer to cover each minor league organization. And so where are we now? Almost 8 years later, if I'm doing my math correctly, yeah. 7 or 8 years later, we really still have that same model. We have writers that are covering specific organizations. Sometimes we have more than one. Sometimes we have writers that are covering a specific league, like the Texas League or the Florida State League. And then we have other special writers that do hobby columns, and we do MLB draft stuff. You've had Sean Kernahan on several times. He's our draft guru. And so we've just expanded, and we just do as much as we can. And you know what? It's a labor of love. Every single one of our writers has a real full-time job somewhere else, or is a student, or is a parent. And so Prospects 1500 is a love, is a side project, is a hobby for all of us. I'm a sales manager for a media company in real life, and you're a teacher, and everyone with the site does something else for good in the world. But we love baseball and minor leagues and prospects, so we spend a little bit of our free time doing this.
Yeah, and you know, for first off, I know there's one listener that had their mind blown with the 1500 because they didn't realize that's where it came from. But I do want to say a couple things in the fact that, you know, you started 7-8 years ago with the idea of 50 prospects instead of the 10 or the 30, which for whatever reason, the 30 is like the standard. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't think of very many that go beyond that. And then for a while there, you know, in the 2019-2020 range, there's a lot of free content out there. And, you know, I remember going to website to website to website and getting all different rankings and all different stuff. But fast forward to 2022-2023, seems like everything you have to pay for, it's, whether it's a Patreon account or whether it's a subscription service, you really can't get a lot of good rankings, let alone 50 of them. But try to get a nice, besides MLB Pipeline, I mean, they're all asking for money now. And I think that goes to what you're saying in that none of us are really doing this for money. We're doing it because we want to just contribute some way to the baseball community and the sport that we love. So the fact that, you know, you're getting not only every team, you're getting draft expert analysis, you're getting some sabermetrics in here as well. We have a couple guys writing their own models. You have a podcast, and it's all been for free. It all currently is free. I don't want to speak for you, but I'm assuming it's going to stay pretty free going forward. It's really something else. So I do admire that you've kind of kept that model. Have you thought about a subscription or a Patreon account or anything like that? Or is it like the mission statement to keep this kind of as it is?
I've thought about it. I've talked to, my partner, Brian, who helps run the site, does a lot of the back end stuff. And we've thrown around the idea of maybe doing an ebook, you know, someone that maybe can download, let's just say an example of putting all of our top 50 rankings preseason together into one document, and maybe someone downloads it for $3 or $5. I don't know. And we've thrown around the idea of that, but we haven't gotten there. And you said it. You said that, and we discussed this just a couple minutes ago. We all have other jobs. If there was somebody that was on staff and this was their full-time job and we're actually paying them to run the site and we were pumping out maybe even more content, then maybe Patreon makes sense, or maybe there's some sort of paywall. I don't know, but that's not in the cards right now. We are publishing original articles that we're writing, and we're publishing our own rankings. And let me say this, and I've said it before, we are not scouts. We are not out at the minor league ballparks with radar guns and detailed notepads and tracking every pitch and the spin rates. And we are watching video. We are going to games and just, you know, tweeting and or Xing or whatever you call that. And every one of our writers that does rankings has their own way of ranking. Like, we have tiers that everyone follows. So we have a model, but the way I might think about my top 20 Red Sox prospects might be a little bit different than how Kurt thinks about his top 20 Tigers prospects, or the way you do your top tier 1, 2, and 3 for Padres prospects may be a little bit different than how we rank ours. So that's what I love about our site, is that everyone gives their own little flavor. And also when we do our aggregates and our consensus and our combination collaboration rankings, we'll have 25 to 30 different writers submit their own top 100s, and then we put them all together and we average them out. And based on points is how we come up with our overall prospects, 1500 top prospects. And we've got one of those probably coming in the next couple of months, or at least before next season starts. So we'll have our new, probably late 2023 or early 2024 ranks for that. Yeah, so
yeah, that aggregate list is such a beast for, in comparison to some of the other websites. We won't name any, but I mean, there isn't one that's, I think, more than five or six aggregate, and you're sitting here with 25 to 30. It's extremely valuable when it comes out. I mean, there, you know, I wish it was, we could update it like monthly. It would be awesome to,
agreed,
to do that. Yes. This is so crazy though. But when that list comes out, it's about the safest list that you can use for fantasy and dynasty leagues. That, and I'm not just saying that, like, I honestly use it myself just because it gives you an idea of what other people would value prospects, gives you an idea of a couple prospects that maybe you should know about more making these trades. It's not super well known. I mean, people are going to go to a couple other sites probably first, but this one, man, with it's such a beast and it's so valuable. I love looking back on it and seeing kind of how right it's been. It's been one of the, I would imagine, one of the most accurate prospects lists that you can find. It just has to be.
I think it's great that you say that, and it is very valuable, and we put a lot of time into it. I would like to add one other thing about our website, prospects1500.com, is that we take pride, myself especially, and Brian and the other editors that we have, in making sure that the site in each column that's published has very good SEO, search engine optimization. And if listeners don't know exactly what that means, we can be found by doing a search. And if you're into Google or whatever search engine you're using, if you type in something like baseball prospects or Milwaukee Brewers top prospects, or whatever it might be, most likely, for the most part, don't quote me on it, but for the most part, we will come up on the first page, sometimes near the top, and that's helpful. Being able to be found, people will do searches for things before they even type in the actual URL, prospects1500.com. People will just use Google and type in prospects or Red Sox, you know, minor leagues, and will come up. Do a search for farm system rankings and see if our February article, where we did our own rankings of each farm system from 30 down to 1, see if that comes up. Type in baseball prospects, something that general, and see how we do. So I am very happy and continue to tweak the back end of our site and each article that we publish. So months and even years later, we'll still be there on the internet. And, yeah, and I think that's really important. And you don't get that out of every website, even ones that are big businesses and have people working full time. And we're kind of just this little guy, but we've been around for a while and we have a good footprint.
Yeah. And I can confirm, because every article you write, having all those tags in there with the players and linking to Baseball Reference and having all that, it definitely, we put in some work as writers, but it pays off in what you just said. So awesome. I did want to get a little bit more personal with you, as this is sort of a celebration episode, and Nate and I have discussed our favorite prospects of all time. Just curious if you had a prospect that, you know, you saw, you know, you knew was going to be great before everyone else, or you loved following, you saw a lot, anything like that. Who is your favorite prospect of all time?
Mookie Betts. I think that back in, must have been in like 2012 or 2013. I don't remember the exact year, but I saw Mookie when he was a second baseman for the Portland Sea Dogs when they came through New Britain, Connecticut at the time, which was the AA affiliate for the Minnesota Twins at the time. And he was just amazing. I think I got to see him in two or three games. I remember him going 5 for 5 with a couple homers in one of the games. And he kind of came on the scene pretty quickly. He was not one of Boston's top prospects, but within a year or so, he was in their top 10. And then he did not spend a lot of time at AAA the following year before he got to the big leagues. I remember trying to order a Mookie Betts jersey or buying one at Fenway Park shortly after his debut, and they didn't have them. Like, there were no Mookie Betts jerseys to be found because they hadn't even been part of the production process yet. And, you know, he became one of my favorite players. And, yeah, certainly was really tough to see him move on a couple years ago. But I'd have to say that seeing him in the minor leagues so many years ago, doing his thing at second base, was pretty exciting.
Yeah, incredible prospect, still moving to second base and even shortstop this year as a Dodger, unfortunately. But yeah, pretty incredible prospect. Rapid rise. I wasn't following the Red Sox too closely back at that point, but it sounds like he had a really rapid ascent, kind of a la Ronald Acuna, if, you know, for my Braves guys out there. Just all of a sudden you had something, you had a franchise turning player. And did you see the talent when you saw him just in person? Was he something different about him? Batting practice, anything that stood out? Do you remember?
I remember just him being a little guy, not a big guy. He's filled out a little bit since then. He's still not a really big guy, just a spark plug and so athletic. And you know, to be able to play the middle infield and move to the outfield and hit with power and hit with contact and smooth fielding. And I could see it. I could just see it. And another guy, you had mentioned Acuna, I think another guy that ascended to the majors very quickly was Juan Soto. I think he was promoted from AA also. And didn't see AAA time. I know Acuna was in AAA for a little while, but I don't think Soto was.
Yeah, I remember ranking Soto and thinking, like, I know this guy is just going up so fast. And then he was there. And then he was a, you know, World Series champion. I was just like, wow. Right. And yeah, the shuffle and all that. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why we do it, right? The prospects, just when they don't do this all the time. I mean, these are pretty special players, but the ones that go are special from day one and still are special to this day. It's something to behold for sure. Well, Scott, appreciate you taking some time coming on to the podcast here. We are doing a giveaway. If you wanted to sort of tease the prize, I hadn't mentioned the prize earlier, but I did mention how they could go about it. But what is the prize?
The prize is something that I think our listeners would be pretty interested in winning. You mentioned how to go about it a little earlier, and just to reiterate that, you just have to send us an email. It's that simple. Email prospects1500@gmail.com, and you're going to let us know, I believe, 4 prospect names. And you could give those details yourself. But the prize, I went into my card cave in my basement where I do all my baseball card breaks. And I went into some of my stash and I pulled out one of these sealed boxes that I still have from earlier last year. and it is a 2022 Topps Heritage Minor League Baseball Hobby Box. And it is, like I said, it's sealed. There are 18 packs of 8 cards per pack, and there are, on average, it says find 2 on-card autographs per box. So there should be 2 autographs plus at least a couple different parallel serial numbered cards, and it's a really cool prize, and I will ship that out to the winner of our giveaway. And it's just something that I wanted to do to celebrate our 100th episode and us being around for the number of years that we've been around. And I will say that the only way people are going to know about this giveaway is by listening to this episode. We are not sharing this giveaway information on social media. It's not going to be listed on our website. So only the people listening right now will be able to enter or know about entering to win via the email.
Yeah. Awesome. And it's an appropriate prize, too. That's a cool set of cards are all in their minor league uniforms. So if you're listening to this podcast, you are into the minor leagues. Can't think of a better prize, Scott. It's really cool. But yeah, pretty small contestant pool when you think about it. I mean, compared to doing a social media one or anything. So there you go, listeners. Thanks for listening to 100 of these episodes. But Scott, again, thanks for coming on. Any last words before we let you go?
Yeah, I'd like to just give a shout out to my oldest son, Adam. Adam is joining our staff. He's going to be doing some writing for the Red Sox beat, kind of getting on my case because I haven't submitted a lot of content lately. So his first article is on the site now. So check that out. He did a little dive into some Red Sox prospects that he thinks are going to be climbing the prospect ladder within the next year. And coming up, we're going to have some Arizona Fall League coverage. I'm going to be out there next month with some guys and ladies from the staff. And then we'll have some other things off season, but we're still going to continue to push out the content. So, you know, stay tuned, keep listening to the podcast, and check us out on Twitter at prospects1500.com. I actually call it Twix now, TWI with a capital X, Twix, because I'm just not into the other name. And thank you, Alex, for everything you do.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. Well, I think that was a very special episode indeed. Special thanks to Scott Green, to Nate Eckert, to Grant Paulson for coming on, being a part of this 100th episode. Yeah, it's just a number. Yeah, we're going to have more. Yeah, it might not mean anything to you. But to us here at Prospects 1500, this is a really special accomplishment. I myself am super proud of what we've been able to do. Now, this isn't my full-time job. I don't get paid for this, but it is a passion of mine, and I hope you believe me when I say that. I love baseball. I love talking about it, and having this podcast really is, as crazy as it sounds, like a dream come true. A couple of years ago, you know, Sarah, my wife, shout out. I don't know if I've ever shouted out my wife before on the podcast, but she said, you know what? Life's too short. We need to find stuff we're passionate about and just go do it. And that was the speech that I needed to hear. And I just went out and I sought somebody to just give me a platform. Just let me talk about baseball and these prospects and something. And that's when I found Scott Green. And you know, I already knew of Prospects 1500 already. And I just, he was the guy that gave me a shot. And it worked out to the point where I got to be in charge of this podcast. And it might not be the best podcast. I may be an idiot at some times and say things that I shouldn't. But in the end, it's something that I love with all of my heart doing. And anybody out there that's listening, thank you. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, from the, you know, on behalf of Nate and Scott. Just thank you so much for listening to this and giving me just a second or two of your day. It means a lot to me. And I hope to continue going forward and giving you some stuff that helps you, entertains you. You know, I'm not trying to offend anybody or, and I don't think I'm smarter than anybody else when it comes to this. It's all just for fun and enjoyment. So again, if you made it through this far, I'm now at an hour and 20 minutes. And if you're still listening to this, you're my guy or girl, whoever you are, and you're listening to this, thank you, man. Shout out, high five, cheers. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. So 100 episodes, we did it. This is Futures Focus. And by the way, we will have more episodes coming up in the off season. We're not taking a break. I know there's been a big gap. I definitely understand that. It's been a minute trying to put this episode together, but we did it. We're done. And now we can kind of get back to the normally scheduled program. And in the off season, we're not going to have one every week, but we got AFL stuff to do. We have updated rankings to do. We have, you know, predictions moving forward, a bunch of stuff. So we'll try to churn out an episode or two a month moving forward. And then when the season rolls back around, of course, we'll get back to our weekly episodes. So again, thank you so much. Futures Focus. My name, Alex Sanchez. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you soon.